hopefully a little indulgence, to try and explain a little bit about the philosophy without getting too technical and trying to keep it short, to the point, and also any questions and answers. I'd definitely be interested in opening up a discussion, an intellectual stimulation, shall we say, on what points you've heard. Basically, the philosophy of the Hare Krishna movement is very ancient. It goes back 5,000 years ago, and this is actually accepted by all of historians. At least some say 3,000, some say 5,000. It's not a sectarian religion. It actually is not a religion, it's a culture. Religion itself is an aspect of human society, which is a type of faith, a very natural aspect. All of us have a faith in something. And that's because all of us require a shelter. We are all in need of something to assist us in the journey of life. Whether you call it God, whether you call it the Great One, or whether you call it the Great Light, or the Holy Angels, these are all different types of faith according to different types of theology. But the Vedic culture itself is something which has many divisions. For instance, the Sanskrit language is the oldest language. It's called the mother of languages. It's very precise. And the culture of India, the Aryan civilization, actually is what is still is, but was held in great esteem as a culture. I mean, for instance, nuclear technology came from the Vedas. One of the major importance of the Vedic knowledge, which is where our religion, if you like, again, I use the word religion, where our culture comes in, is of course the philosophy of Lord Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita. Lord Krishna, the word Krishna means all attractive. All attractive, of course, as in this room, everyone is attractive, aren't they? We're all attractive. Now, our attraction, our ability to attract, is dependent upon our beauty, our fame, our strength, our heart. What are so many characteristics we attract? These characteristics are actually characteristics of the soul. And therefore, the word Krishna means all attractive. He is considered to be, in the Vedas, the Supreme Brahman. Supreme Brahman means he is the unlimited embodiment of all spiritual energy, Krishna. The word God is a very inadequate word, because the word God means so many things to so many people, but generally it means a controller, a lord, a power, as we see in the idea of Allah Akbar, God is great. Everyone can identify with the greatness of God. But greatness itself and power itself are not actually the true characteristics of God. They're an aspect of God. An aspect of God which is something that we can relate to, because we are inadequate in our power. We are helpless in many ways to deal with the forces of nature, the forces of time, the forces of so many aspects of our lives. So therefore, the Vedas go even further and explain that Krishna is the all-attractive personality of God. Personality is something which comes from the soul. It's not a material characteristic. There are no scientists who've ever been able to create a personality, because personality comes from consciousness. Consciousness is something which is not studied by our gross or our subtle intellectual ability. Nobody can define consciousness. It's really indefinable because it's so subtle and it's so wonderful that it, if you like, surpasses all of our limited ability to understand things through our analyzation, our analyzing senses. So therefore, consciousness is the characteristic described in the Vedas, aham brahmasmi, I am consciousness, I am soul. Now, the nature of consciousness is also described very detailed in the Vedic literature, that consciousness has qualities of beauty, knowledge, strength, fame, wealth, personality, and millions of other qualities are associated with consciousness. For instance, if we study how our bodies, as soon as we're born, we bring into the body a very wonderful presence. I mean, I've seen babies, they've got this beautiful presence. You want to cuddle them. You want to look after them. You want to love them. Because of consciousness. So therefore, what the Vedas are teaching is that in our lives, we are always actually relating to consciousness. But at the moment, consciousness is manifested through matter. Because of it being manifested through matter, and the Vedas explain, earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and ego, these are all different levels of material conditions. Each one of us are a combination of these elements. But at the same time, these elements are inferior to actually ourselves, in other words, me. Because I exist beyond these elements. In other words, to give an example, I've got an arm. I say my arm, but I don't actually, when the arm is chopped off and falls on the floor, I don't say I'm on the floor. I'm not. My arm's on the floor, my leg's on the floor, but I am beyond the arm, beyond the leg. So in the same way, we are manifested through matter in terms of bodies. Millions and billions of different types of bodies. Trillions of different types of bodies. All of those bodies actually have the one important factor, which is consciousness, for their existence. Therefore, what Krishna consciousness is teaching is that when Krishna appeared in this world, he displayed the, if you like, the true nature of God. That is why you see the dancing, the devotion, the actual glorification of God through love. Krishna consciousness is about loving God. Because the aspect of consciousness is that consciousness, the characteristics of consciousness is love. You cannot separate love from consciousness. That is why all of us are appalled and horrified beyond anything to see the cruelty that happened over the last few days. It completely defies any imagination of horror. And to think that some conscious human being could think up such a horrible thing has left us all shocked throughout the world, because really all people want in this world is to have a harmonious, loving relationship with both ourselves, people around us, nature, etc., etc. So Krishna is explaining in Vedic literature that God is a person, and every single individual. And there are unlimited individuals because God is unlimited. So therefore, every single manifestation of God's energy in the form of spirit soul is manifested in consciousness. That consciousness belongs in the transcendental plane. Now, this is where I'm going to get a little technical, but I'm going to speed up because it might get a little boring. The material plane is the plane of ignorance of God. Now, beyond that ignorance is the transcendental. Transcendental is a plane which is transcended to the material conditions. The material conditions are conditions which are imposed upon us by the actual fact that we are, if you like, different and completely unrelated to this material world. We really have no relationship here. We are visitors. If you study this planet, it's like a hotel in the sky. Think of it. Just try and imagine it now as a hotel. You came in at a certain time, right? You didn't know where you come from. Does anyone here know where they came from? Do you know, I was born in 1952, November 22nd. On November 24th, I don't know where I came from. Suddenly I appeared in a particular place, in a particular circumstance. I then grow through 48 years of circumstances that I have nothing to do with. I'm looking at people, I don't even know why I'm here with them, but I'm here with them. A country I didn't even know why, that country, why not another country. So it's like, basically, you check into a hotel, and according to your karma, this is where karma comes in, so I'll quickly touch on that. According to your previous karma, you get a particular type of body. In other words, you get a particular type of ability to enjoy or suffer within that environment of the planet. Now, we stay on the planet for a certain time, and we move on. We have no, we're visitors here. Every one of us are visitors here. We, all of us, are going to move on. We can call it transmigration, we can call it death, we can call it reincarnation, or we can just call it the end of everything. Whatever we want to call it, we will move on. So therefore, what basically the Vedas are explaining is that our visit here is for a reason. And that reason is to make us understand that we are not independent of God. We cannot exist without our dependency on God. We cannot exist without our love for God. We cannot exist without our relationship with God. All of the things that we have here are transitory dolls that simply are a substitution for a reality. And it's very much like a child. Sometimes the child is a little envious of the mother having a baby. So the mother, because of love for the child, says, okay, you have a baby also. Here's a baby, here's a pram, here's some nice cooking things for your baby. And the child imitates the mother. But in reality, all of these things are not the real world. They are simply a, if you like, a demonstration of illusion. So therefore, when Krishna comes into the world, he speaks this divine knowledge that the soul should realize his existence here, yes. He should understand the temporariness of this world and the actual reason for it. And then he should actually make all his endeavors to go back to his original spiritual existence, which is eternal, full of unlimited bliss and unlimited knowledge. Here everything is limited. Sure, there's happiness, it's limited. There's money, it's limited. There's wealth, fame, beauty, but it's limited. And in all honesty, nobody's satisfied with limitation. Nobody is satisfied with limitation. Because actually limitation is any of us. Just like if I said to you, stand in a field for 3 days, you would rebel because you have the consciousness to understand freedom. Freedom of choice. Freedom to enjoy. Freedom to experience higher experiences. So this freedom is the natural state of consciousness. And God is the unlimited free. And we are also part of the unlimited free. So therefore, spiritual life in the Vedas is simply getting free from limited conditions of temporary illusion and coming to the transcendental plane of unlimited experience, which is actually simply a matter of yoga. The word yoga means to unite with the unlimited. That's it. It's very difficult to... So I'm finishing here, and now I want to ask any questions quickly so that we don't prolong too much. I don't know if it's making sense too much, I hope it is, but I'm basically trying to explain the various aspects, and they are five in number, which I could have started off at the beginning. The Vedas explain nature, as in nature, time, karma, the soul, and God. Those are the five divisions of Vedic knowledge. We belong to a culture of bhakti, which is the philosophy of devotion to God through spiritual practices. So any questions at all? Anyone have any questions you'd like to ask? Don't be shy. Any type of question, maybe points I've missed totally. Yeah. You see, God is unlimited, and his energies are actually perfect and complete. I mean, if you like the word God, I don't like it so much, but let's look at the word complete. The idea of completeness is very difficult to accommodate in our brain because we don't have any experience of completeness. But if we understand that God is complete, all of his energies are complete. The material energy is only one of his energies. He has unlimited energies. The material energy is there, really, to take us back to God. It has no other purpose. Its sole purpose is to actually direct us to a situation where we can again reestablish our eternal love to God, our relationship with God. That relationship is totally free and independent. God will love it for us. So therefore, our experiences in this material world are simply knowledge acquiring experiences. And like you say, some people want knowledge, or they want to experience life for the immediate, and that's natural. But then again, if you look at the difference between the human and the animal, the animal is completely obsessed with the immediate needs of the body. Let's take, for instance, eating, sleeping, mating, and fearing. These are generally four principles described in the Vedas. All animals have to eat. If you say to, let's say we get 10 dogs together and say, here's a plate of food, have a debate about it and shear it out when you finish. They're going to immediately go for it and fight for the death. So therefore, that tendency in us is also an animalistic tendency. It's an animalistic tendency that we tend to want the immediate. Now what intelligence tells us is, okay, there is the immediate, but there's something more. And that is called the ultimate. Just like in your education, you get educated for immediate needs as a child. Things like keeping your body clean, making sure you do this, making sure you do that. But the ultimate is, if you get a good job, good education, good experience of life, and that you have the equipment to facilitate you through this world, isn't it? That's the ultimate. So in order to gain the ultimate, you sacrifice a lot of immediate things. You give up your going to the pub at night when you're a student so that you can squat for your exams. You may have to give up on a girlfriend for a while so that you can get this or that. So the point is that you do always sacrifice the immediate for something ultimate. And therefore, the real ultimate is going to come at some point, whether it's in our, this is our philosophy anyway. Lifetimes are just visits. And you may have 10 of them, 20,000, a million. Ultimately, these things are all within the category of time. Time has a beginning, a middle, and an end. Existence has no time. You see? Existence has no time. There's no time in the spiritual realm. There's no time in the spiritual, in the transcendental realm. There is just unlimited existence. It's very hard to comprehend. Unlimited existence with no measurement. You see, the difference between the material world and the spiritual is that one's measurable, one's not. But no one will accept the immeasurable because they say it's too beyond imagination. That's silly, because actually you were born limited, and the only reason you got better from being so limited is because of hearing, because of education, because of opening up your ears to things which are beyond your limited experience. I don't know anything about atomic energy, but I can definitely hear about it and get more experience from people who do know. So anyway, cutting it short, that was one of it. The point is that ultimately, the ultimate experience is the thing which drives us on. That's love. You see, no matter what you gain in the world, what did Jesus say? What is the benefit of man who gains in the world? It loses the eternity of soul. And when he said eternity of soul, he also meant the experience of the soul. The experience of the soul is pure ecstasy. Pure, unadulterated, uncontaminated, unconditional ecstasy. That's what we hanker for. Whether we get it through food, booze, drugs, or whatever we get, we're looking for ecstasy. And that doesn't mean a little tablet is driving up. So that ecstasy is there, but not on this realm. You see, that's the problem. It's just like we are looking at the reflection of the tree in the water and trying to grab an apple from the tree in the water. It's a reflection. So the reality is there, otherwise there couldn't be the illusion. If you say you don't believe in illusion, that's your business. But if there is an illusion, there must be a reality. And if there is a reality, then we have to find that reality, because that's where we are. Very good question. You see, the beginning of that is application through faith. You have to have some faith in something, isn't it? We apply everything according to our belief. Now, in the beginning, that faith leads us towards a deeper search. That deeper search will motivate us on. For instance, all these boys and girls, they don't drink tea or coffee or cigarettes, they don't have illicit sex, they don't gamble, they don't, practically they don't watch television, they're 19, 20 year old kids, you know, and it sounds crazy, it sounds like we locked them in a cupboard, we tied them up, and we let them out only for a bowl of soup, put them in. It's not like that, it's a question of experience, taste, you see, it's a taste. When you get that taste, it's something which puts everything into perspective, and that taste is an individual. You can't orchestrate the vision. You can't dogmatize it. You can't force it. It's an individual thing. And that's why I think sometimes when people can't actually convince people when they can't actually show that thing. They have to use violence. They have to use aggression, fanaticism. Because when you can't argue something, sometimes you just punch the other person. So we should be very careful that religion is not an institution. It's not a sectarian concept. It's not something belonging to a country or a place. Religion is the ecstasy itself, and it comes from that taste of experience of God, and that should be real. And many times I think some religions tend to become bogged down in rituals and dogmas. It's not actually, you know what I mean? I'm not criticizing that religion, because I think every religion has its pure aims, and we're no better in our practices than any Christian or anyone else. We try. But the point is that I think that you must have the knowledge to give you the foundation to move on in a particular field. And Vedas do have that knowledge. My experience, someone's going to share. I think we're getting close. Back at the back. You see, desire is not a bad thing, desire. The wrong desire is a bad thing. So the thing is that what we find is that we find that the senses, for instance, our senses are tongue, smelling, hearing. We have senses for acquiring, what we call acquiring knowledge, through eyes, ears, mouth. We have senses for acting, and of course, you know, we have sensual senses, touch, our sexual organs, etc. So the main thing is, all of these senses require experience. But the thing is that the experience on the level we're trying to get it on is not sufficient to satisfy the heart. It's inadequate, because the material is inadequate. You see, I'll give a terrible example. It's a terrible example, but it really hits home the truth. I've got a girlfriend called Cynthia. I love her with all my heart. Okay? Now, I take her out to a restaurant, I'm sitting in the restaurant having a great time, and suddenly she falls down dead. And there she's lying on the floor, we're in the restaurant, and I was supposed to have a really good evening with this girl. And I'm thinking to myself, what do I do with this now? Because it's a total change of relationship. Because the substance itself is inadequate. The body, it's inadequate. It can't stay. I mean, I'm getting old. And old age, for instance, with fortune, but the point is that I don't want to age. I don't want to get old. But I have to, and I have to accept it, because that's part of this energy. So what we have to do is to realize the limitation of what we're trying to experience. In other words, don't stop any experience as long as it doesn't interfere with higher experience. So therefore, higher experience comes from a deeper pleasure, the pleasure of really the soul. And that is something genuine, has been proven by great saints and realized souls. And I think the thing is that naturally, it's like the example of a child. A child may put a knife in its mouth, but if you bring it a big ice cream, the knife will go. No more talk of knife. But if you don't bring it an ice cream, you might end up sticking the knife in its mouth. So therefore, it's not a question of suppression, it's a question of replacement. I think we'll finish up now. I'm sure it's time. I'll come to you. Sorry? Please.
Thank you.
Yeah. Is this a question now or are you doing it? Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah, but what I said in the beginning was, that spirit is the self. You see, it is the energy of the soul. At the moment, it's manifested through matter. Now, much as matter is also a creation of God, it's created with a particularly limited and temporary function. There's nothing you can do about that. The grossness of matter, the inadequacy of matter, the temperateness of matter and the limitation of matter is something which is actually antagonistic and actually adverse to our happiness. You can't call having cancer and dying as something you're doing as a pleasure in life. It's something you're doing because the actual body itself is made up of earth, water, chemicals, and various inferior products. And whether you want to accept them or not, whether you want to romanticize them, whether you want to glorify them, but I will say to you, the reality of life is when you look in the mirror when you're 90 and look at it and think to yourself, for 90 years I've looked after this body, I've groomed it, I've kept it in bed, fed it, I've done everything for it, including a job, a career, and all of the family. And at the end of it all, is that all that's got to offer me? What I'm seeing in this mirror? No. Because the body itself is like a coat. Yes, you need a coat, and you should have one, and you should look after it, and you should wear it, keep you warm. But don't think that you are a coat. That would be a great mistake for your own life. Jesus said, we quoted Jesus, he said that you can only serve one master. You can't serve two. You make your decisions in life, who you want to serve. But you must be very clear to understand the difference between matter and spirit before you make that decision. And that is really all religion is. Is a chance to study another dimension. We're not teaching people to give up their material lives. All of these boys and girls have jobs, careers. He's a doctor, he's a Hare Krishna. They earn money, they've got families, they eat good food, and they go on holidays. They're quite normal. What they do give up is things which are actually detrimental to their happiness. So that's a question of choice. One man's food and another man's food. But definitely, I hope I haven't hit on the negative of negation. We're not saying negate. Yes, God has given us everything. But that doesn't mean we drink arsenic, because God gave it to us. We have to use our intelligence as to what is really for our ultimate benefit and what is for our temporary benefit in this world. And therefore, life is a quest for truth. It's a quest for reality. You know. I mean, let's say, for instance, I don't like to be bleak, but say you're dying and you say, well, I watched these sinners 500,000 times. What's the point? Did you achieve anything? I'm sure at the time it was great, you're sitting back and enjoying these sinners. But at the end of it all, is that what life's about? Isn't that very pessimistic outlook for life? That life simply for being here for a while, hanging around, doing a few things and leaving? So I think we have to look at the overall picture to see where we fit in. I think we'll finish up now because we're really running out of time. This gentleman here had a question.
Okay.
Sorry.
But the nice thing is, we can talk to you, but we can't talk to the television, but the television does that as well.
Yeah.
I mean, we're all told that pleasing, New York is all that. And it really gets you, doesn't it? It's nice to be able to see the television.
Yeah. Okay, well, last question, Bill. It sounded like I missed that point, but in reality I didn't, because there is 100% difference between spirit and matter. You may not agree with that, but in actuality, matter is completely opposite to spirit. I'll give you three examples mentioned. I'm talking from our philosophy, not as a person. Our spiritual nature is to be full of knowledge, to be full of bliss or ecstasy, and to be eternal. The nature of this world is to be full of temporary existence, misery, and the other one, which is ignorance. If I turn all these lights off in the room, you're completely ignorant. You won't be able to see a thing. So the point is that your body works under certain conditions. These conditions are inadequate for your spiritual experience. If you take shelter of these conditions only, you can't have a spiritual experience. But if you combine matter with spirit, yes, I agree, but it's a very, very intelligent business to do, and you have to be very careful. There are many people in the name of spiritualism who have lived a completely material life, including religion. So the subtle line between material absorption and spiritual absorption has to be defined. Self-realization has to be determined. You can't just assume that everyone is aware of their spiritual nature. It's not that easy. Because if it was, we would be it. Okay, we'll finish there. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you. Round of applause for Bhavanath Prabhu, please. Okay, thank you for the nice question.
you for being a wonderful audience. The best we've ever had. A big round of applause for the audience. And I'd like to thank you for patiently sitting throughout the program. I hope you enjoyed it. We have Darnie, where are you? Darnie is our representative here. Come up. He's our man in Brighton. I'm going to give you a few words.
Hare Krishna. I'd like to thank everybody for coming and dancing so enthusiastically. And look forward to meeting all of you, if I don't know you already. Also, I'd like to express my gratitude to all the devotees who come from far to make this event possible. Please, everyone, round of applause. I'd just like to introduce you to my friend, Adi Gurus. He's going to make a quick announcement about the next meeting in 2 weeks' time.